Well, we've talked a lot as we make our way through the Bible about Jesus being the Messiah, and there's no doubt from the scriptures that the Old Testament references to the Messiah are fulfilled in Jesus. But did you know also that Jesus was a prophet? Not only was he the Messiah, but he was a prophet as well. That means he spoke for God and he spoke of the future. And the majority of what Jesus spoke, although not entirely, the majority of what Jesus spoke about the future, we find here in Luke chapter 21. As Jesus gives us details from the end of his life until he comes back again for his church. And boy, that's a long time, isn't it? When you think about that, he was looking into the future for him. For us, some of it's in the past and some of it is in the future. I like to describe from Jesus' perspective, as he begins to talk about the future, it was like a mountain range for him. There were peaks and there were valleys and there's a lot of depth to what he was talking about. But for you and me, we find ourselves in the middle of that mountain range. Some of what he's talking about already being past, some of what he's talking about being in the future. Some applying to us as the church, and some applying to Israel as the nation of Israel that God reestablishes before the last days. By the way, it just so happens in 1948, Israel became a nation. After not being a nation since 66 AD, which is the reason that I believe that we have solidly entered into the last days. And as we see some of the alliances around the world coming together, even as the Bible declared that they would in the last days, Iran, Russia, a few other alliances that go along with that, we find ourselves now in the middle of that mountain range, some of it fulfilled, some of it not fulfilled. And that's going to save some confusion for us. Oftentimes prophecy, when it was given kind of like looking at a mountain range. You just look at it and you can't see any of the depth that's in it. And so God will cover a large chunk of time, but when you get up close to it, there's some gaps that are there. There's some valleys that are there in the prophecy, and it covers a larger amount of time than when we first look at it. That is the case with this chapter. Now, as Jesus makes his way up to the temple is going to come into play here throughout this entire chapter. Remember, this is the temple that Herod rebuilt. Ezra built the temple after the people returned from captivity into Babylon. And then King Herod decided that he wanted for his namesake to rebuild this temple. It took him approximately 70 years to build the temple. It was not completed during the life of Jesus. It wasn't completed until around 60 AD. And within a decade, it was destroyed. I don't know if we really think about how new it was really when Titus marched on Jerusalem and destroyed the temple and pushed every stone off of that temple. The temple had just been completed a handful of years before that, before it was absolutely destroyed. So Herod's desire was to make a name for himself, that throughout the years people would go, look at the temple that Herod built. And it went by the wayside. There were other things that Herod built, but this by far was his most spectacular building. Now, we pick it up in verse 1 of Luke 21. It says, and he looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the treasury. Now, Jesus is in the temple. They gave in the temple very much like we give. We don't pass an offering plate. We don't do so because it's wrong to pass an offering plate, by the way. We just believe this is the way, excuse me, we just believe this is the way that God has spoken to us about how we are to allow people to be able to worship through their tithes and offerings. When we started the church, and I think it's probably this way today, there are so many ministries that focus on money. That's what their focus is. And it's like every time you turn on the radio, every time you listen to that ministry, every time you go to church, they're talking about money. And churches often will have an offertory, where for 10 or 15 minutes, they'll have like a second sermon that they give you on giving just to really encourage people to give. And so many people I've heard in the past say, you know, the reason I don't go to church is because all they want is your money. And we decided, let's just take that away. Let's just, you know, put out some boxes, let people give and see if God blesses us. And we're told that it wouldn't work. We're told that we would never reach our potential as a church unless we passed the offering plate. I don't know that God is bound in bringing us to our potential as a church as to whether or not we pass an offering plate, by the way. And God has always provided for us in doing it. That's how they did it. They had a box that was out and people would give. They had one central box, as far as I understand it. Jesus also said in another passage that many of the rich, when they gave, they would sound horns and get people's attention when they gave, so that people could come and watch the rich give. So they would count out their money. Over the years, I have seen so many different bizarre things in raising funds. I was at an event one time where they were raising money, and the guy up front said, "I believe the Lord has shown me now. He's speaking to me that there are 10 people here that are going to give $10,000. This is back in the, by the way, like the late 70s or early 80s. So $10,000, a lot more than $10,000 is today. Still a lot of money. And then he said, "If you're going to give $10,000 tonight, then stand up." And people started standing up around the room until they had the 10 people stand up. And so everybody's looking, who is? Who's? Oh, that person. Oh, that person's given. Oh, that person's given. I've seen at one particular offering, they had people reach in, get all of their money out, whatever money they had in their wallets, hold it up in the air, and then say, hold it there until the offering plate goes by, and then put it into the offering plate. So, I don't know, they thought maybe this guy's going to bless my money. I'll hold it up. And they were going to take their money. If you just took it down to put it in your pocket, then it'd kind of be obvious to the people around you, did you see that? That guy didn't give everything that he had. Supposed to give everything that you have unto the Lord. And so many different bizarre ways of giving. But Jesus watches them give. He watches them go through whatever it was that they went through and counting their money before they put it in. And of course, Jesus told us, don't let your right hand know what your left hand is doing, so that your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. So our desire is to just, you know, give and not make a big deal out of it and worship in giving and let God be the one who would bless us and not let anyone know. Now we saw a certain poor widow putting in two mites, just two pennies as it were. And he said, truly I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than them all. For all these put out of their abundance, have put in the offerings for God, but she, out of her poverty, put in all the livelihood that she had. Now, this tells us that God looks at giving differently than we look at giving. We think, you know what? I don't have much money. Everything's really tight right now. I have like $5 left over. I'm not going to give anything, because what's $5 to, you know, what the church needs to do, to the electric bill or to, you know, whatever it is? What's $5 to that? But that's not how God looks at things. That's why when people say, you know, if you got to dig deeper in order to be able to do what God calls us to do, I don't, at that point, you're relying upon people to do the work rather than upon God, allowing God to touch people's heart in what is supposed to be given and what is supposed to be done. But as far as giving, when you think about it, if you're doing really well, you're just really being blessed right now financially, and you put a couple $100 in the Agape box tonight, you're doing really, really well, then there's a person next to you who's really doing poorly. They've lost their job, the economic times are bad and they're difficult, and they're really struggling, and they give $5 and all they have is 20. Now, they've given a quarter of all they had. In fact, being able to give out of a point of struggling allows you to be able to give. You could give everything you have. You could be like this lady. You could give everything. You could say, God, I give it all to you. It's $2, but I give everything that I have to you. And it allows you the ability to be able to do that. Somebody tonight that has a couple $100,000 in the bank, it's going to be a whole lot harder for them to give everything they have to God